for dinner? What's for dinner? What's for dinner? Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much. Oh, perfect. Perfect. Welcome, guys. Welcome. First of all, I want to say if you hear some ambient noise, that's because it is, again, another podcast from a restaurant. This time, instead of a Cracker Barrel, I'm sitting here at a Denny's, the epitome of
dining experiences in the U.S.
Of dining experiences in the U.S. And the sound might be a little funky on this one, guys, because I'm literally holding my recorder as I'm eating and sitting across from my guest. My guest, however, this is really cool. So let me tell you what's been going on. I have been working on a cruise ship for about 2 weeks now. And that's why there has not been a podcast to be uploaded, because I have not had the internet to do it. But now, myself and my guest, who also worked on the ship, we have about 3 hours to kill until our rides pick us up. What the hell? Oh, right next to the bathroom, too, apparently. So, we're just shooting the shit, and I said, you know what, let's do a podcast. And he says, cool, because he's a cool guy. Not only is he a very cool guy, he's an incredibly talented magician. And to call you a freak show performer, is that politically correct?
Yeah, yeah, freak show performer, sideshow, you know, stunt show, whatever. I don't, it's all the same.
Okay, freak show, sideshow, stunt show performer.
Weird guy.
John Shaw.
Free time.
Way too much free time. John Shaw, everybody. John Shaw, I'm very eating while we do this. Very amazing performer. Cool guy. Cool as hell. One of the real cool guys that we met on the ship. And this man has some insane stories. We were just talking, you were talking about Gibson, Florida, because we're in Miami right now.
Florida.
So so Gibson, you said that's where like a lot of the retired guys go?
Yeah, well, Gibsonton, Florida traditionally has always been the winter quarters for circuses, for many circuses and carnivals. And still to this day, you go down there during the wintertime and you'll see, like, Ferris wheels set up in people's backyards and, like, all these rides and stuff. And when they get home, they set them up, they work on them again, and they just leave them up. So you'll be going down through the middle of town and you'll see, like, you know, people with elephants in their backyards and all this crazy shit. And it's great because at no other place will you find that. I mean, it's just like this one little town, and that's... it's kind of where everyone goes, and its nickname is Gibtown. They call it Gibtown.
Oh. Is it? Do they have, like, homes, or is this just, like, they have, like, trailers, and they just,
a lot of,
like,
trailers. People, you know, a lot of them live in their RVs year-round for traveling, and then they'll just come back there and just park their house, and and a lot of them also have home, you know, regular homes or work, big workshops, big, you know, kind of like a warehouse type of thing, too. But a lot of people just, you know, rent space on big proper pieces of land, and they park their home and open up their stuff and hang out there for the wintertime.
Wow, that's insane, man. So it really is like a gypsy lifestyle doing stuff like that.
Oh, it's an insanely gypsy lifestyle.
Because I know as a comedian, it's like, you know, I'm on the road half the year, and but, you know, I have like a home base. I have L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of your thing, too? You have a home base in Vegas?
Yeah. Yeah, my main home is in Las Vegas, and but we travel around and do shows, and like now with the ship thing, this was like a whole new thing for me, because I never did ships before. Always wanted to, but the nature of what I do and how I look kind of kept me away from the ship world, because they were just scared of what I might do. I guess.
So you're telling me Disney never made you an offer for their ships?
No, no. For some reason, I don't think I passed the facial hair policy.
Well, you look like you could be like in a Pirates of the Caribbean kind of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nowadays, it seems like the beards are becoming more fashionable. Ever since like Duck Dynasty guys and stuff, people think, oh, now beards are cool, and everybody are doing beards and things. Mine, I've just been cutting in unusual shapes and stuff. But it's pretty amazing how people sit there and like, oh my God, you must be crazy, because I was like, it's just facial hair.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I shave it off and I look just like you.
Well, is that something you did on purpose to separate yourself from other performers? Or
yeah.
Just because you want to like, hey, I want to just fuck around?
It's a little bit of both. I get I was like, I had, you know, my beard has always been, always grown in thick. And I was just like, one day I was like, man, it'd be kind of cool to do something different with it. Because I get bored easily. I was like, how can I make my life more difficult in the morning? So I decided to create, you know, this weird art form on my face. But
how old were you when you first did that?
The first time I started shaving the beard, like, different than, like, a regular goatee, I was probably 19, 20 years old.
Oh, wow. So it's been a little while that you've been doing this.
Yeah. And I started doing the funkier designs by the time I was 23. I was doing all kinds of funky, weird patterns.
What's the weirdest one that you ever had?
It was really involved. I have to show you my passport photo, because on there...
It's on your passport?
Oh, wait, he's getting his passport out, everybody.
Passport out.
Meanwhile, I'd like to praise Denny's for their grits. Very good today. Oh, my God. Oh, wait, I'm going to try to just... Jesus Christ. Actually, that's the wrong thing to say, looking at this picture.
Yeah, I know.
I am going to describe this beard. It literally looks like Satan on your face.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got, like...
Except Satan wouldn't put that much effort into looking like that.
No, you got, like, horn. Your beard is shaved with, like, horns coming... Almost looks like Heath Ledger-ish, with, like, the coming off the sides of the mouth, and the beard, the bottom of the beard is going down to a point.
Okay?
Everything's great. How are you doing?
Good. Who's there?
Oh, this is just for posterity. I'm taping this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Steve, he can talk for you.
What's that?
I would like that Steve talk for me.
Okay. Got it. Have you? By the way, is that scary to you? Our server's looking at his picture now.
Well, I work in a travel agency, so.
Oh, you work at a travel agency?
Yeah. Well, it's okay, that's fine.
That didn't frighten you?
Who is him? Him.
What? Between the two of us, which one do you think that is?
Him.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah. Why? Who told you? Somebody told you something strange?
No, he just told me that his picture looked interesting on his passport. The miracle of the English language. Now, that is a pretty insane... How often do you get, like, double takes when you go through, like, immigration or whatever?
Oh, every day. It's like, you know, you can't look like this and expect people not to stare. I mean, that would just be kind of...
No, but I mean, do people, like, look at that picture of the beard and your beard now and go, wait
morning.
A minute, this doesn't look like the same crazy beard guy.
This is when we were... We're in St. Martin or St. Thomas and coming back onto the ship, security guys looks at my picture and then like, oh... You need to take your hat off, just to make sure. I'm like, really? Who the fuck else looks like me? And I've been living on this ship since December. You don't know who the hell I am right now? Like, I changed?
Yep.
I have a doppelganger somewhere?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, I was just on the ship for 2 weeks. And John's been living on there since December.
December 7th, yeah. December 7th I signed on, yeah.
All right, so... It's been almost 5-6 months to the day. Jesus.
Yeah, December. Yeah.
Is that the longest straight tour you've been on?
So consistently like that? Yeah. Normally, you go out for a few weeks here, a few weeks there. But you always go home, you know, eventually.
Right.
Or you're jumping around from hotel to hotel. But, I mean, just living on nothing but a ship is... Whole another world of weird.
I've just 2 weeks. I've realized that it was fun. Two weeks was fun. 6 months, I imagine, want to blow your fucking brains out.
Yeah, I mean, there comes times where you really sit there and think about your job choices. Like, was this a good idea?
Well, because I know it's interesting too, hearing you talk about like the lifestyle, because it mirrors comedy a little bit, like. I assume you travel, like I don't think there's sideshow clubs, but you travel in carnivals
go
to, like,
well,
the music festivals
and stuff. Yeah, we work nightclubs. Oh, yeah, nightclubs, venues and stuff.
What kind of venues? Like, is it something that hosts the night, or is it an actual, venue that's predominantly...
There's no venues that book nothing, you know, not like a comedy club is a comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time we'll play places that are, like, music venues. But then they do other things at the music venues, too, where they'll book in, like, a show like ours. And they'll have maybe bands playing as well, but it's a nice break as something different. And then we also work comedy clubs, too, because our show is a funny show. It's just gross. But there's funny. I don't consider myself a comedian, but
no, neither do I.
And it's a good thing. That's why you're like, I'm like Carrot Top, except with talent. That's not true. He's worth a lot of money.
Yeah. Laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
What comedy clubs have you played?
None of that were memorable. I think like Bananas and stuff like that.
I've heard of Bananas.
They have one in like Poughkeepsie, New York, and one in like Jersey. And then there was like a place called Bonkers, I think, one time.
In Florida?
It might have been, yeah.
Orlando?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I played that Bonkers before.
So there's like places like that. There's actually a place in California that's like a comedy magic.
Oh, the comedy magic club in Rosa Beach.
Yeah. So stuff like that, you know, because we mix with the show that I do when it's just myself and my wife. We do a show where it's a mixture of magic and sideshow and stuff. But it's a comedy show. It's like, you know, we make fun of ourselves. We make fun of the audience. You know, we do gross things while saying funny shit.
Nope.
Not really a comedy. Comedy like you do, where you just get up and talk to the microphone, which to me seems insanely difficult. I can drive a nail into my nose while telling a joke, and it makes the joke funny for some reason.
Yeah, see, now driving a nail into your head, see, to me that sounds difficult.
It's not as hard as you might think.
I was just going to ask you something. With the magic aspect of it, are these tricks that you invented, or is this just shit you learned on the road?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, you mix stuff up between. There might be a commercially sold prop or item, and then you just take it and I put like my own twist on it. So it's, you know, I mean, if I'm gonna do a trick, it's got to be something that people will believe that I could actually do, rather than me trying to scam them, or I just make fun of it, or I make fun of magicians and. You know, and do stuff like that rather than being serious. I hate serious magic when they get up there and they're all serious, stone faced. Like, it's like, yeah, dude, it's a card trick. I don't give a shit what you say.
I noticed some of the guys on the ship, the magicians that we saw, which, by the way, great show,
great,
the Illusionarium.
Yeah, they're all great guys, yeah.
Yeah, and all great guys, too. But I noticed, there were some guys that were very flash about it. And
they take themselves a little too serious sometimes. Like, like, you know, illusionist to me, and I do illusions as well, and it's a glorified furniture mover as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, it really is. It's like, you know, here's this box, and I'm going to push this box around, and then something's going to happen. It's like, that's pretty much every illusion.
What's one of the illusions or tricks that you do that you totally thought of yourself?
One of the ones that I created is... it's a melting through kind of effect where...
I'm sorry, melting?
Melting through a piece of metal. But instead of, like, most guys will pass through, they'll cover themselves, they'll go behind a piece of metal and cover themselves, drop the cloth, and then they're through it. Where I took a spin on it, and instead of it, I go through it slowly, so pieces of me start melting through, so that it'll be covered, I'll be behind it, and then you'll start to see the push through the material and open up the material, and just my leg is through. And then just another part of my body. But the twist I put onto that was, as I'm partway through, then my girl comes through me.
Oh, wow.
Comes out of my body as well. So it's like a production of a girl, but through the body and stuff.
And was she on the other side of the metal, or
no,
she just appeared?
No, you never
appeared?
See her. Yeah, you just, yeah. You just show the piece of metal, and then all of a sudden the girl comes through you.
That is a really good. Really
so, yeah, so there's, like, stuff like that. When we do cutting in half, if we take, like, we'll take a standard illusion, like cutting a girl in half, but instead of laying her down, she stands up, and I put the chainsaw between her legs and then cut her up to her neck and then pull her in half while she's standing up and stuff like that. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, instead of, like, everyone uses swords and stuff, we like chainsaws, you know, because if you're going to cut somebody in half, you're not going to do it with a big, giant butter knife, which is what all the swords ever look like. So, you know. We do it like that, and there's sometimes we'll add blood into it, and you know, make it. It's like basically our idea of an illusion show was Adam's Family meets the Munsters meets the guy from Saw. If you throw those three things together, that's what our illusion show kind of looks like. It's like the guy from Saw had an illegitimate love child with the Munsters and the Adam's Family. It would be like that, because horror to me should be funny. There should be, always be a little element of, like, oh my God, but mixed with a little bit of campy humor.
Of course.
Because you shouldn't take it too seriously. And it's, I mean, I'd rather have more fun with it.
Yep. Totally good. Okay, side note. Wait, side question. Hold on 1 second. The mic level a little bit so we can hear ourselves a little better. There we go. Side question. Marilyn Munster or Wednesday Addams? Mature Wednesday Addams.
Mature Wednesday Addams. Which Wednesday Addams? The old original or the new?
Is there a new?
Yeah, well, there was, what's her name? Christina Ricci played Wednesday Addams, and then you had the original Wednesday Addams
from the TV
television
series.
From the
TV
series.
Oh, I see.
Dealer's
choice, your choice.
I would take the Christina Ricci adult version, yeah. Because she's creepy and kind of fun, and it's like, you know, she probably takes it in the butt. I would be venturing to get, if she, you know, she has like vultures and stuff as pets, it's like anal's probably not out of the question. It's not off the table.
Yeah, with Wednesday Addams,
yeah,
I doubt it.
Yeah. So you gotta go with that.
Yeah. I mean, her name is Hump Day, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly.
Hump Day, huh?
You just made that up.
Just made that up now.
You're proud of yourself. Look at you.
I am. I got a good grin on my face. You can't see it, folks. When I come up with a good one, I acknowledge it. That's really cool. And you and your wife Alex.
Yes.
So, by the way, Alex, are there any videos of you online or whatever?
Yeah. If you look us up on YouTube under Original Sinners, and Sinners is spelled SYNNERS.
Got
Original
it.
Sinners. Yeah.
Look that up, and because Alex, as far as drawing attention. Because, like, John, you see John, he, you know, he's got the fun facial hair. His arms are tatted up. You look like you'd be a roadie for Metallica,
yeah.
or an opening band, either one.
Yeah.
Alex, on the other hand, what did you describe her as earlier today?
I think it was, like, a Halloween crack baby or something.
Or chihuahua. Or
yeah, a Halloween piranha.
That's it, Halloween piranha. Very good description. Sweet girl, but definitely draws attention where she goes.
Yeah. She's like a little mini hurricane sometimes.
Well, not just with the way she acts, just like her, just the way she looks.
Oh, her look, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure she, like that, it seems to me what Alex has done, and do you mind if I describe like some of the,
no, go ahead.
She, well, her tongue, she, I guess, surgically got it.
It's bifurcated, is what it's called.
Bifurcated?
Bifurcated, like a lizard tongue.
Yes,
it's split at the end.
Yeah, you have your tongue is actually two muscles. They're just together, and if you cut them in half, the two will work independently of each other. That's why she can move her tongue back and forth and open it and close it like little fingers.
Which makes you a very lucky man in my
book. Yes, it does.
So she has a bifurcated tongue and, I guess, surgically altered ears?
She had her ears altered by a professional body modification guy, and they're pointed like little pixie ears or devil ears or whatever you want to say, like elf ears, that kind of thing.
Is that like, does he have to open up the skin of the ear and implant
something? What they do is they cut the top curl off completely, which she saved and keeps in a little jar, of course. And then what they do is they take the scalp and they score the cartilage, so get it so they can fold it, and then they fold it together, and then they stitch that little section together, and then that creates the point.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I had a completely different idea of how they did that.
Yeah,
wow, I did not realize it was that kind of...
Yeah. That's if they're done right, that's how they're supposed to be done. Yeah.
If they're done...
I've seen really, you can find some really bad body modification out there, and then, of course, it just looks like duty.
You could say shit, by the way.
I know, duty sounds funny.
Duty is... you just reminded... There was a joke I wanted to try on stage.
The duty-free? Or
yeah, exactly.
Like
just for... Side note, guys, the comedy show, it was a lot of fun, but there are children on the ship, a lot of children, and they all have to come.
At the 11 o'clock show.
Yeah, at the 11 o'clock late show, they all have to come. And just, you know, one of the lines was just to say to a kid, did you laugh when you saw the sign that said duty free? Because I did. Just, don't quote me on that. That won't be in the club. It's Cruzac. I digress. So you and Alex have been together for, you think, is that 4 years?
2010, yeah.
Okay, so going on about 4 years now. You, I know. I think you told me the story of how you met.
Yeah. Retell that for you.
Yeah.
Well, she was. We actually had a lot of mutual friends. I was living in New York at the time. She lived in Las Vegas, and I've lived in Las Vegas for many years, and I was bi-coastal for a little while, and I was always going back and forth working and doing different stuff out in Vegas with the casinos and stuff. We never actually physically met, even though she dated some of my friends and stuff, but we never actually met, but we had a lot of that stuff in common. Well, years go by, and there's an opening on this tour called it was called Hell's a Poppin', a sideshow review. It was like a mixture of like burlesque and sideshow stuff, all kind of jammed together. And it was like a touring show, and we had like midgets and half people and screaming kids that I want to fist, and like a penguin boy and like all kinds of, you know, different people. We had a guy in Zamora the Torture King who was became famous for working with Jim Rose Circus Sideshow. He was an original Jim Rose Circus Sideshow member and stuff. So we had all these different people on the show, and so a spot opened up and they had asked me to join, and I knew she was on there and I had known the Torture King, so I was like, well, I was like, I'll give it a shot. I'd never been on that kind of show before, so I was like, it was worth giving it a shot. I knew there wasn't going to be a whole lot of money in it, but it seemed like a fun thing to do. So I joined just after Christmas in New Orleans, which is where they were, and they had been driving all night, and I get on the thing, and I've been up all night, and I've had like probably 3 or 4 shots of energy shots when I got off the plane. So I was like, going at like 8,000 miles an hour, and I get on. Meanwhile, they've been all up, they're all hung over from the night before, and I'm on there just being loud and very New York-y. And I remember her telling me her first thought of me was, who is this guy and why is he so fucking loud?
Wait, she said that about you?
Yeah, she said that about me. She hated me when I first got on because they were all tired, and I'm like really loud when I talk and I get excited about stuff. So,
you went up on a tour bus at this point?
This was a tour bus. It was an old prison bus converted into a tour bus. So wow. They had bunks in the back and a refrigerator, and they have internet on there and television and all kinds of little like communal area with couches and stuff. So I joined the show, and her bunk was in the back, and I wound up taking the bunk that was next to hers because that was the guy who just left, that's where he was. So I jump in that bunk, and then just over a period of, you know, a few weeks, we started realizing that we had a lot in common, and just kind of, it just kind of happened one night kind of thing. It was just like one of those things that just built, and just like, we just fell for each other. It was weird, but it just happened. We weren't looking for it. She had a boyfriend, I had a girlfriend, and then all of a sudden we didn't anymore. Then we had each other. So,
do you find it that it's easier to date somebody that is kind of in your profession and that has their own unique style to them as well, as opposed to trying to be with somebody with, for lack of a better term, a norm job?
Well, the girl I was with when I met her was my trial for the norm thing. She had a 9-to-5. I had health insurance through her because we were a domestic partnership and all that kind of bullshit. And but it was, I mean, basically, inside I was dead. No, you know, right. I was with this girl for 6 years, and it was, oh, wow. I had to get drunk to fuck her. It was that bad. Wow. Where, yeah, it was just like, there was just nothing there. I tried it, and it just wasn't for me.
Was she the only time you ever tried a norm?
For any length of time, yeah. I've been, when you do this kind of job and stuff, and people see you on stage, and then they think that's what you're like all the time. So, and you become a novelty fuck in a lot of ways. Because people are like, they want that strange, crazy experience, or they want to shock their parents or their friends or whatever.
No, I know I've had a lot of strange on the road where they're like, why aren't you funny right now?
Yeah, exactly.
I want to fuck you.
Yeah. People think it's like it's my job to do that. I don't sit at home and, you know, swallow swords and stuff.
That's your job now.
Yeah. So it's just weird. And then when you do stuff and then it's too gross, and then their family is like, then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I got to go, you know. But those things never last. They only usually last 3 months or so.
Yeah. I know, like, it's funny. Like, in comedy, it's usually, I'm kind of this opinion that comics can't date each other, like, because it's too, it's either there's ego clashing or jealousy and whatever.
Yeah.
I happen to get lucky. I found a girl who also a comic that I gel with and who makes friends everywhere she goes.
Yes,
so, yeah, it seems to be, like, almost the opposite thing, though. Like, in comedy, it's like, oh, you don't want to date within your own, but in the sideshow world, it's like...
In the sideshow world, it just makes it easier because, I mean, magic and sideshow and even comedy, I mean, it's all filled with people that have some kind of fucked up background somewhere along the line. They either hate themselves or... And they use that as a way to, you know, make them feel better. And so, I mean, any performer, you have that narcissistic thing going on and the ego and stuff like that. And it does. I mean, there are clashes with, because everybody wants to be great. And when you put two creative people together, eventually they're going to just smash together and butt heads and stuff. But it's about how you work through that that makes, you know, for a good relationship. And sometimes you have great days and sometimes you have really terrible months.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Well, let me ask you this too, because, like, as a comic, like, I have a great outlet if Allison ever does anything to piss me off or whatever, I could write a joke about it, you know, and I get my frustration out that way. And you know, she's got a good sense of humor; she never takes it personally. Have you ever had to do that with, like, anybody? Not necessarily a girlfriend, but somebody in your life that you, like, either created an illusion about or a bit about or some kind of a sideshow, like, think about and use them within it?
I actually did when I was married briefly.
Really?
Yeah, to a stripper. Seemed great. The movies are wrong. Never works out. I don't give a shit what they say. But you know, I actually created a routine about about the ex-wife and stuff, and I had, like, a photo of her, and I would wave my hand over it, and it would turn into the devil, and she would be, like, Satan, and then, like, fire would come out of the picture.
Oh,
and yeah, and it was, like, it was a whole story thing, and then I would make it, you know, I took our marriage certificate and ripped it up and dropped it into water, and it turned into snowflakes and, like, blew up in the air, and, like, yeah, just, like, stupid, crazy shit like that.
Oh, no, that's great, man. That's
yeah, you know, you just...
Did you do it more as a cathartic thing, or just like, hey, this will be funny?
I just thought it'd be funny, and hopefully that she would find out about it and get really mad, and that would be great. I didn't need to be there for it. I just knew it would be happening, and that was good enough for me.
Did you ever find out if she...
Oh, no, I never found out. No. It is funny, though, because I did get contacted by her new husband, who was a fan of Stern, and when I did Stern, I got an email from this guy. It was back when MySpace was still, like, a thing, and he's like, yeah, hi, I heard you, and a really big fan of you, what you do, and it might be a little weird, but I'm married to your ex-wife. And I'm like, yeah, it is weird, but I don't care. I was like, that was a time period that is, you know, it is what it is, and,
right.
You know, that good luck. But, yeah, she became a mom and stuff, and it's like, oh, that's awesome.
That's weird when that happens. Like,
yeah, it's like, your vagina's ruined forever.
I actually, like, back in when I was in my young single 20s, I hung out with this couple strippers sometimes. And you're right, the movies, it's nothing like Pretty Woman.
Not at all.
I remember this one stripper I met up in West Palm Beach. And long story short, we messed around a little bit. And then she was at the comedy club. And then she said, come see me at work, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So I brought a couple of friends over to go to this club. We walk in. First of all, you walk in, and there was, like, hardcore porn on a screen right when you walk in. So you know it's a classy place.
Yes.
And
gentleman's
then,
club.
What's that?
Gentleman's club.
Oh, there was nothing gentlemanly about that.
Yeah,
can I get some more coffee?
Coffee.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is it okay if we sit here for a little bit? We're waiting for rides. Thank you. I'm in there with my buddy, and he goes, where is she? And I scan the room, and then I see her, and I go, she's right over there. She's naked, like, just straddling some guy facing me, like her back to him. And she sees me, and she just smiles and waves and goes, oh, hi. And then points to her wrist and go, give me 1 minute. I'm dealing with this fucker over here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, this is not going to last.
No, and I've worked in the strip clubs before, and it just always turns out poorly. I mean, it takes a certain kind of broken individual to do that job.
Have you ever actually met a stripper that is legitimately working her way through college?
I had one, and this funny story. My brother runs strip clubs,
really?
In New York, yeah, and he was dating a girl from the club, and she was putting herself through medical school, and she actually became a doctor at out in Minneapolis at the really big famous place, and I can't remember.
Our Lady of the Singles?
No. I can't remember the name. Out in Minnesota, there's a real famous hospital, and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head right now. But yeah, she actually became a surgeon.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Actually, put her, she was really. I knew she was very smart, but I also knew she shook her ass for dollar bills, and I was like, yeah, right, whatever. and she did. She actually did it, oddly enough, which was hilarious.
You know what everybody says, like, oh, it's so demoralizing to women, but. And actually, do you know Bobby Slayton?
Yes.
Yeah.
Slayton, incredibly funny comic, legendary. He had this great bit. He goes like, you know, they say it's demoralizing to women. Meanwhile, I'm walking out of there. My kid's college fund is in her pants. I got a hard on. Who's getting demoralized here?
Exactly.
And it's kind of true.
It is very true. I mean, it's even like the porn industry. They're like, oh, you know, it's degrading. And it's like, well, the chicks get paid more. They don't actually have to do anything except look hot. And take it on the face or something, but you know, the guy has to really do the work and shoot on command, and if he doesn't, he don't have a job anymore. The girl can fake the orgasm, and no one gives a shit, you know. So
should be equal pay for guys
and
porn.
They get paid a billion times more than the guys do, and they get to pick which guys. So it works out. Oh yeah. The girls pick what the guys. Most of them. Depends on, I guess, on the company, but that's. From what I understand, that is pretty standard now that the girls can pick and choose who they work with.
Huh. Have you ever done any kind of? And if you have, you don't
porn?
Have to.
Yeah. No. Nobody wants to see me naked.
Fair enough.
Donate my body to science fiction when I die.
Somebody seen Back to School.
Yes, I have. And it is a great joke, and I love it.
You know, it's funny, actually. I was just telling Dean about this. Dean is one of the Howl at the Moon piano players on board the ship. Were you in the room when they were screening my film?
Yes.
There's a scene, and for those of you who haven't seen 30 Nights of Paranormal Activity with the devil inside the girl with the dragon tattoo, it's a little movie that I was in. But there's a scene where the camera's jumping around, and you see the two naked girls in the shower scrubbing each other.
Yes.
And how the scene worked is, when we saw it, you guys were laughing over like the scene, which was awesome.
Yeah.
But what you guys didn't hear is at one point, like, my wife turns to me and goes, really? Because I was taping them. And I kind of slink out, and then I just stop and I go, those are my nieces. And that was just my little, like, homage to Back to School.
Oh, that's funny.
Do you remember that scene?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, in the hot tub. So when I told Dean that, he goes, oh, I get it, Back to School.
That's funny.
Yeah, I love that you know that movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I mean,
oh, one of the best.
Yeah. Yeah, just hilarious.
I actually got to, I met Dangerfield once at the Improv.
Did you
in
really?
LA. Yeah, it was, I think it was around 2003 or so. He walked into the, just to the bar in front of the comedy club, and I'm sitting there at a table, and nobody really did anything, like, or, you know, turned and looked, and I just saw him walk in, and I said to whoever I was with, I'm like, that's Rodney Dangerfield. They go, yeah. I said, we should stand up, and she goes, yeah, you should. So I stood up and I started applauding, and then everybody turned around and they started. All the comics started applauding, and you see Dangerfield just kind of has this look like, "What's going on?" He turns to his girl. He's like, "What are they doing?" And she goes, "That's for you. They're doing that for you." And like there was this real look of like humility on his face.
Yeah.
Like he felt very humbled
wow.
and seemed like a really good guy.
Yeah, I was living in Vegas when Kinison got killed out that way. He was on the 15.
Yeah.
Going between Vegas and L.A. and stuff. And it was one of those things I kicked myself in the ass for never going to see him live. And I wish I would have.
Yeah.
And now Dice lives out near me.
Vegas?
Yeah. It was funny. Funny story is one night Alex and I were driving into town. And it was like a Ford Ranger or something like that. Some SUV-type vehicle. Pulls in front of us and it's going to go off, and it says Dice Man on the license plate. I was like, what a douchebag this person is. And she's like, why? I was like, oh, they have a Dice Man. I was like, that's, you know, Andrew Dice Clay, you know, goes by the Dice Man. And she was like, well, did you maybe think that's maybe him? And I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah, he lives out here. And I'm like, So I pull up, and sure enough, there he is driving the fucking thing. He was on his way in to do a show that night, because I think it was at the Riv at the time. And, yeah, so here I was, you know, saying, oh, what a douchebag, but it was actually the guy. It was for him, so that was kind of like a funny thing. But you run in Vegas is great. Like, there's a little comedy get-together every
oh, yeah, like, that was the one that Geechee guy did?
Yeah, yeah, and everybody would get together. Like, it was Geech, and so, I actually did Geech's show there when he was at Hooters.
Oh, he did a show like it was comics in the back alley telling jokes.
Yeah, yep, and I actually sat in and did a guest spot in there one night and stuff, and did some sideshow stuff. And
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it was pretty fun, and like you never knew you're running like Ron White was there and all that kind of jazz. So.
Yeah, I only went to like two or three of them because I worked Vegas, you know, maybe once a year. But yeah, I had a great time. Unfortunately, I got there too late, like because I had to do a late show at Harris.
Yeah, yeah.
But
fun. You know?
Oh, I bet. Like,
yeah, it was always a lot of fun.
See, I love like the old school. I love Rat Pack era shit, and I love when you know I could be part of some kind of entertainment gathering in Vegas. Because I saw I saw Carrot Top there one time.
Oh yeah, Amazing Jonathan would always show up.
Oh really?
And,
yeah.
You know, and I mean, you just anybody who was in town, they would show. I mean, Ron White always come and hung out, which was really cool. I mean, he just was really, really chill and just didn't give a shit about nothing except just hanging out.
Yeah, yeah. I worked with Ron once at the Miami Improv years ago before Blue Collar or anything, and I just remember he got drunk one night, and the next day he either he was saying it or somebody else, but apparently he woke up in somebody's house sleeping on their couch. He had no idea where he was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It was like that's good stuff right there.
One of those kind of nights.
Yeah.
So do you and Alex have like a regular show in Vegas now?
Not in town. We travel. I mean, we travel around doing our bit.
But you never do anything in Vegas?
Every once in a while, but it's always like private like functions or corporate functions and stuff. I started getting away from the nightclub stuff just because a lot of these guys go in and play for beer. You know, we'll perform. Yeah, it's become the market's become so flooded, and everyone is so desperate to perform that they've now it's like they go in for nothing. So it makes it harder for people like us who make a living at it to do anything because we don't play for beer, you know, or drinks and stuff. It's like those days are done. I don't do that, and I was always of the business aspect of it. It's called show business, you know, and it's. You know, you got to make a living. So we ventured out and went into, like, the fair market, college market, and corporate market and stuff like that. So that's where the money is. And, you know, these other guys can work nightclubs and want to be rock stars. And I'm more interested in paying my bills and making a living.
that's interesting because, like, same thing with comedy. Again, like, it's oversaturated, especially in L.A. Yeah. Guys will do spots for, like you said, nothing. Like, I won't drive more than 10 miles, maybe 15, without some kind of money. I need at least gas money. You know, I appreciate a stage, but I'm not going out there for that. But, like, in town, I'll hit open mics just to kind of, you know, work on some bits, whatever.
Yeah, work on stuff.
Are there open mics for what you do?
Yeah, I mean, you can find open mic nights for all kinds of stuff, you know, whether it be spoken word or, you know, just the comedy stuff. And you can just get up and do things. You know, there's a lot of great places out there where you can work on stuff or... You know, me personally, I mean, we rehearse a bunch, you know, and we're fortunate enough to work enough on real gigs that we work new material into those shows.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you know, but you don't go to open mics yourself to, like, work
on
stuff?
No. I mean, for me, it's like we'll rehearse it a bunch of times and then work it in slowly into the show where the other strong material that we know works stays, and then we'll work in little pieces at a time. But real audiences
and paying ones are always better.
Well, yeah. Well, it's funny because, like, now when we go, like, again, as a comic, when I go to an open mic night, and I can be a bitter, jaded prick sometimes, but, like, I'll watch newer comics or I'll watch guys, and I'm like, oh, you're doing that bit?
Yeah.
Oh, really? This is what you're doing? I know exactly where this joke is going to go, and...
Magicians and all of us are the same way. Everyone, it's like, you know, you're all, oh, I could be doing that so much better. Or, oh, man, that's a hack move. Or
I was going to say, what's one of the hack moves in, like, the magician or sideshow world?
We like to call it magic hands, where the magicians will come out and be like, wah, do that kind of thing. Or they yell a lot and they point. And yeah, go, man, man. And it's like, oh my god, you're so dumb. And it's like, I don't know. Just it gets so magic is not respected for one good reason. It's dumb most of the time. It really is. They look. It's all these guys who can never get laid, and these nerds, you know, and stuff like that. And I am a nerd too. And that's why I know, because I didn't get laid for a long time doing magic. It's not very sexy. You know, it's like, ooh, let me show you this card trick I've been working on for a month, you know. And nowadays, it's like, you know, it's become a game where it's like you just, he who has the most money wins. It's not even about talent anymore. It's about whether or not you can afford to do it. I mean, every show in Vegas is four-walled. I mean, you pay to play. So you pay the casino, and they don't give a shit if you sell tickets or not. You know, as long as they're getting their monthly checks, that's all they care about. So it's become a game where, like, only the rich now can play, or if, you know, you have a very wealthy boyfriend. You know, and a lot of guys in Vegas have wealthy boyfriends. But, you know, I mean, it's just kind of become one of those things, which is, it's fine. I mean, you know, I wish I had tons of extra money, but, you know, by doing stuff like this, the cruise ships are now, to me, the new place for magic to be reborn. And because there's good venues, they put money into stuff. I mean, the theater show that we're doing, I mean, they dumped $4 million into that place. Yeah.
Well, you could tell. I mean, dude, that ceiling.
But, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You can see that, you know, somebody put a lot of thought into this.
Yeah.
And brought together a bunch of very talented people to make a great thing. And they see the return is coming back so much. We became the number one show in the fleet within, like, a few months of opening. And that's never happened in a new show, like, wow. Especially with a magic show. Because traditionally magic, people think magic and they think kids. And we're not a kid show at all. Now, yeah. Can kids come to it? Of course. But that's not what we're here for, you know. You're not going to be seeing a show there's no obscenity and there's no nudity, but it's not like, you know, there's no balloon animals either, so.
Which was one of my complaints, actually. Yeah. I sent a comment that there should be more balloon animals.
We actually had a complaint that there wasn't any dancing in the show. Yeah. They were like, the one person complained that there's no dancing. It's like, there's like two other shows with dancing in it. How many effing dancing shows do you need to have on one ship? I get it, you like dancing, but this is not, it's a magic show, not a dancing show.
do you find, because like for a while, and again, I always compare it, I'm comparing magic to comedy just because it's my world, but like cruise ships were considered the end of a comic's career.
Yes, yeah.
You know?
And it was like that for magic and stuff as well. It was like, you're either on your way up or your way down. It's that kind of and fairs and all that kind of stuff, all the same thing. But these are the venues where you can be paid, and paid pretty decent too to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, and you have a place to live while you're there. You're eating for free. I mean, there's money to be made. And if people want to sit there and think, hey, you know, this is where you go to die. Okay, well, I'm gonna go die over here and get paid, because I'm more interested in that than fame. You know, for me, it's like, you know, fame is one of those things that it's there, great, but it doesn't pay the bills. I know a lot of famous sideshow people who don't have two pennies to rub together, but they're famous.
I know, it's like, it for me, like, that was always kind of like part of the end game was the fame, you know. And I've had my little successes, and I'm happy and everything, and I'm not done, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still going to keep
pursuing
it and everything. But it's like, you reach a point where you kind of go, you know what, if it doesn't happen but I'm still able to keep doing this forever, and I'm good with that.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's kind of how I am. It's like, I'm less concerned with trying to become famous and more concerned with trying to become better.
Yeah.
And a lot of the younger magicians are only concerned with fame. They all want to be Chris Angel and be on television and stuff, and that kind of stuff can happen without you even trying sometimes. You can try. You can do both, but you should concentrate on being a better performer and worry less about your TV special. Or, you know, a lot of guys get like PR people. I'm like, what do you need? You're not even doing any shows. Why do you need a PR person for? Why do you have a manager? You can't even book a birthday party, for Christ's sake. It's like, you know, I've just seen so many guys, and all their interest is becoming YouTube sensations and all this kind of thing. It's amazing. They don't work hard at becoming a better performer, but they work hard at becoming a better marketer, which you know, yeah, it's like, okay, well,
That's the same thing in comedy. It's like you see these guys like, oh, I've got like, you know, 40,000 followers on Vine. Yeah. Okay, but can you do an hour?
Yeah.
No, I could do 6 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, you're not a fucking comic,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Good luck out
and
there.
That's
you know?
The thing. A lot of these magic guys come out, and, you know, they're doing, it's all flourish. It's all flash magic. It's like, well, can you do 4 30-minute shows a day? No, you can't. You know, with us, it's like, you know, you got to do, we do 2 shows a night, 6 days a week, and they're hour and a half long shows.
Yeah.
It's a long show. Even if you're not doing, you're obviously not doing the whole thing, but it's still letting you, you got to be there, you know, half an hour before the show, and then you got to do the show, it's an hour and a half, and then you got to wait for the next show to happen, and you got to do that. So it's, you know, it's a long day.
It's an endurance, man. It's
a long
marathon.
Day. And a lot of these guys, they couldn't do it. They couldn't. A lot of them can't hack it. And then, you know, following a lot of the rules, as you well know, on a cruise ship, there's a bunch of rules, and, you know, and it's not for everybody. It's just not for everybody. It's either you want to play the game or you don't. And, you know, I don't mind playing the game because the end result is what I'm more interested in rather than my personal stuff. So,
right. Now, you'd mentioned Chris Angel. I hear that, like, within the magic world, he's, like, a hated person.
Yeah, there's some people who are okay with him. I mean, me personally, I'm more annoyed by his actions and the things he says and claims to create and stuff, and just and it, the stuff that, you know, he's had dealings with friends of mine and how he's treated them. You know, he went from being a normal New Yorker to, you know, a wealthy idiot, and thinks about, because you have money and fame, you can just do whatever you want, which to a degree is very true, but that doesn't make it right. And so I take issue with stuff like that. You know, he's not very good at all, and that's my problem is, you know, and a lot of people go to see the show, they're like, it's not, you know, because they see the television show and they think that's what they're going to see. They don't realize the television show is edited and staged from beginning to end. There's nothing real about reality television.
Oh, amen.
And if you think it is, then, you know, I got an island I'll sell you.
Which one?
Rape Island. David Copperfield owns that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's up for sale.
I thought that was a new Fox series.
But, you know, I just before we came out to do the show, I was in a place in Vegas. It's a monthly magic show that happens. And he came with a big entourage and a bodyguard into this place that nobody was even given. I mean, people were like, oh, it's Chris Angel. But, you know, do you really need a bodyguard to go out with your friends? Like, seriously? Like, do you think anybody cares that much about you? Oh, you do. And it was like he was there to stop people from coming up to him. Meanwhile, nobody was coming up to him.
It's almost like, hey, notice me, but don't notice me.
Exactly. Notice me, but don't talk to me.
Yeah.
You know, and he even has a thing. I know people who worked with him. And he even has a thing, like, if he knows you're a magician, he doesn't want you to be at the show. He doesn't comp magicians in unless you're, like, one of his personal friends kind of thing. But, like, if a magician is going to be at the show, he would prefer them not to even be there because he sucks. I mean, you know. So
oh, really?
Yeah, he's just, you know, I think he's just intimidated by most magicians myself, but because he knows he's not very good. And, you know, even on his television show, friends of mine have worked with that. It's like they're teaching him the tricks right before they shoot it because he doesn't even know how to do
something. Are you serious? Really?
Hey, it is not, they edit everything because he's not that good. I mean, I know he's got to do a lot in a very short period of time. I get that. There's a time crunch, but he's just not very good. He should spend more time, you know, working on his act rather than working on his abs, I think.
Well, I was going to say, I think, like, what kind of made him break out was the fact that he didn't look, quote-unquote, like a normal magician.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, the guy's in, I give him credit, I mean, the guy's in fantastic shape. I mean, he's in mid-40s, or late 40s now, and looks great.
Yeah.
You know, he really does. And he's got a great look, and he was very smart in a lot of ways by crafting his image. And so I give him big props. I mean, he took something and nothing and made something out of it. Even when he had been turned down a million times by all kinds of people. And he kept at it. And eventually sold a product that you know, that he created. So, I mean, you got to give the guy props for effort and taking a lack of talent and turning it into a very successful career. I mean, wish I could do that. That'd be great.
Dude, you're incredibly talented. You know that, man.
I do all right. You know, I mean, I work really hard at trying to be the best I can be and trying to, like, help out anybody who wants it, you know, because that, to me, when I got into Magic, that's what happened for me. You know, the older magicians were like, oh, you know, let me help you with this. Nowadays, everybody is so concerned with bashing each other that they're not, the art isn't progressing. It's just becoming, you know, flash on a video screen.
It's so funny. It's the same thing with comedy. It's like, guys, number one, a lot of young comics don't know where modern-day stand-up started from. They think, oh, like, who's your influence? Oh, man, Dane Cook. I'm like, wait, what? Nothing against Dane, but have you ever heard of Shecky Green, Milton Berle, Fatty, you know?
A lot of them, it's the thing, they don't, nobody researches old comedians or old magicians even, you know, or old sideshow performers. It's like, you know, when you trace back sword swallowing, it goes back a long, long way. I mean, shit, magic dates back to an Egyptian hieroglyph. There's the cups and balls routine is on a hieroglyph.
Are you serious?
In Egypt, yes, absolutely.
Wow,
it is considered one of the oldest magic tricks ever done. Is just the cups and balls, which is a classic magic effect.
Yeah.
It's there's actually hieroglyphics of it that were found of them doing magic tricks back then, and which was probably a con game, like it was used on the streets. But, you know, it was that kind of thing. But people were doing magic. Magic was a religion at one point, you know, and these guys were advisors to kings and pharaohs and stuff. They were just magicians and, you know, soothsayers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But that's where all that stuff originates from. It's like people don't like, why does a magician wear a top hat and a tux? So where did that start? Where did it come from?
Where did it come from?
You know, that's exactly. It's like, who started?
No, I'm asking you. Do you know what?
Well, I mean, it dates back. One of the most famous guys, like dove workers, was a man named Channing Pollock, who was really became the quintessential magician with the top hat and tails and the card manipulation. He was like one of the original guys, and I mean, and he dates back to, like, you know, the 50s and stuff like that, and 40s and stuff, where that's when it started becoming popular. I mean, back in the day when Houdini and you had Blackstone Senior, you know, you're 20s and stuff. I mean, Houdini died in 1926 and stuff. So it's like you had Blackstone and Senior, his son Blackstone Junior also did magic, but they all wore the tuxedo and stuff. And but then you had, you know, this guy Channing Pollock really took that and, you know, became one of the best bird acts ever. Like, we have a bird act in the show.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
Yeah, James, like, DeMere, and he's one of those guys. He's very well known amongst magicians as one of the best bird acts ever.
I see that. Like, and just talking about, like, the tuxedo and everything, like, I noticed, like, you know, you said you got the Chris Angel guy that's kind of doing the, you all right?
Yeah, it's 9 a.m. I just checked my time.
It's 9:15. By the way, you haven't slept yet, have you?
Nope,
he hasn't slept, and I'm on about 2 hours, so
yeah.
This podcast sounds weird, that's why. Actually, I think it's going fun. But no, James, the dev act, like you said, we got the Chris Angel that looks kind of rock and roll, tatted up.
Yeah, exactly.
And then James, he's like press tuxedo.
Yeah.
And what I noticed too is his tie and I think his something else matched his eyes, like same color blue. It was like I even said to Allie, I'm like, that's a fucking showman right there. He like that very precise as far as everything.
There's a lot of thought that goes into every little thing. In magic, there's nothing is done without a purpose. You know, and that's the whole thing with magic. It's everything is there. You're using everything you can to fool somebody. No matter how you get there, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you got a stage, if you got to have a bunch of stooges in the audience to get the effect to, you know, then hey, go for it. You know, I mean, you can't really fault somebody for getting a good effect over.
No.
I mean, there was a guy named Ted Annemann who was a real famous mentalist, and he did one of the most intense bullet catch effects that ever existed, and I can't reveal the method, but one of the methods he did where he would actually have random people bring guns in, and then he would select one of the guns and then have that guy load it and fire it at him. I mean, and it was a jaw dropper. Absolute.
My jaw is literally open right now as you're talking.
Absolute jaw dropper. And You know, he would catch the bullet and then pull it out, and it would be rifled, and, you know, and drop it on a plate, and boom. I mean, and it was unbelievable. I mean, and there was a guy, his name was Orville Meyer, who was the guy who created that particular effect, and then sold it to this guy, Ted Hanneman. But, you know, it's like there's some real intense magic out there that's real dangerous, and there's so many different aspects to magic. You can have a mentalism, you can have, you know, street magic, which is, you know, now basically close-up magic that you just do out of your pockets, which was just close-up magic, or strolling, as they used to call it back in the day. And now it's street magic and stuff is the new, like, hot word. And but it's all the same shit, I mean, basically. You know, but you had, like, David Blaine came out, and David Blaine's actually a very good magician. He's a better endurance artist than anything. You know, people are like, oh, my God, it's amazing what he's doing. I was like, well, it's not really magic. It's just him being able to stand around for X amount of days or whatever. And that to me, is impressive. Not the fact that he's locked in a box, because who gives a shit? I mean, it doesn't matter. But the fact that you can stand up for 3 days, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit who you are. You try to stand up for one day, you know.
I couldn't stand up for an hour waiting in line.
Exactly. We were, like, dying just standing in line this morning trying to get out of the fucking ship. We're like, oh, God, I'm so tired, you know. But there's so many different things out there. And Chris Angel is good for magic in a lot of ways. He's bad and he's good. He's good because people are becoming more aware of it, and are like, younger people are like, ooh, well, magic can be cool. So, you know, I got to give him props for that kind of stuff. I mean, you can't bash him completely. Even if I don't like some of the things he does or whatever, that doesn't matter, because in the big scheme of things, it generates attention for magic, which then makes my job easier to book.
Right.
And so for when he came out, I was like, yeah, he's kind of weird looking, does weird stuff. This could be beneficial for me.
And apparently it is.
And it is. Yeah, it's like,
but,
you know.
Like you're saying, nobody beats the old school, man. Nobody.
No, I mean, there's something to be said for like, knowing your roots and knowing where you come from. You know, from going from, like, the Merlin magician to a tuxedo magician to now a guy who wears, like, leather suits and is tattooed with piercings and stuff. And, like, the emo or goth or whatever, I don't know. It's
totally get it, man. But speaking of old school, you don't know what's about to happen, but those who know the show do. It's time for the little part of the show called The Skippy Green Show.
Okay. It's The Skippy Green Show!
My God, John Shore, as I live and breathe, how are you, freaky-looking cocksucker?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here with you and Denny's. All right, John, how this works, my friend. I'm going to ask you a question, and you got to answer this question in 10 words exactly.
10 words exactly.
Not 11.
Not 9.
Not 9.
10 words.
And not 9-11, but 10 words exactly. Are you ready?
I'll give it a shot. I know I'm going to fail.
You can't fail. It's just a question. If you could fuck a girl using any of the props you use in your act, what prop would it be and why? 10 words exactly.
A chainsaw in her ass.
5 more. I like where this is going. And why?
Why? So I can see. Fuck. So I don't know how to finish it off without it being stupid. to watch her pelvic bone crack. I don't know. Is that close enough?
If we count pelvic bone as one word, sure, why not?
Dude, this is so much fun, man.
Hey,
thanks,
man,
so much for talking to me while we're sitting here. Where can people find you online or anywhere?
You can find it under originalsinners.com.
SYNNERS,
originalsinners.com. And we're on YouTube and the Facebook and all that kind of happy horse shit.
Nice, man.
Yeah. And then also we'll be bringing our act to Norwegian Cruise Lines here soon in the Illusionarium.
Excellent.
So. Do you think you'll be back by September or so? Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I'm coming back on with the new cast because I have to train the new cast as well, and then for the next this next contract, and then I'll probably rotate into the show itself for the contract after that.
Fantastic. Well, I'll be back on board too, so I can't wait to see the show.
That'll
man.
Be great.
And guys, thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed. This was not only this funny, but it was interesting too. Like I really, really enjoyed shooting the shit with you, man. You guys know where you can get me: flipisfunny.com, at Flip Schultz on Twitter, Facebook. Next month or this month, whatever when this comes out, sometime in May, people. My episode of the Nick at Night sitcom Instant Mom and the season 2 premiere of the ABC show Mistresses, which I have a part on, that episode should be premiering. So check your local listings for that. I'll of course send out notifications on my Twitter and my Facebook and my Instagram, even my MySpace. What the hell?
Really?
I think I still have a MySpace floating somewhere in the junkyard of the internet. But thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you for not hating me for being for not putting out a podcast for a couple of weeks. And I will talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds.